Hi, everyone. Thank you for tuning in today for another episode of AYT Information Hour. My name is Tammy, and I'll be moderating this edition and handing over the reins to today's interview to my comrade, Jeremy. I'd like to start by reminding listeners that the thoughts and opinions expressed during this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of myself or RETargeted.com. We're here every Saturday trying to educate the public and victims so that we can bring an end to the blatant human rights violations that targets of these crimes experience. I'll open the phone lines in the second hour and the chat to questions from our listeners, so stay tuned for that and write down anything you might want to ask today's guest. Don't forget to tune in to Jeremy's nine-part series, AYT Roundtable, which is still occurring here on TalkShoe on Wednesday nights at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Archives of his show and this one are available at TalkShoe.com. Just type AYT into the search bar from the website, and you'll find the archives there. Don't forget to register for Jeremy's website at RETargeted.com so we can hear your input anytime you feel like offering it. Today we're joined by James Walbert, who is joining us even though he is feeling a little under the weather, but thank you, James. Hi, James.
Hey, how are you?
Doing all right? Oh, I'm okay. How are you doing?
No, I've been sick for like the last month.
Well, I hope you feel better. So have I. I know how you feel. It's great to have you here today. But as for me, for today, I'm just going to moderate, and I'm going to pass the mic over to Jeremy so we can get right into it, and I'm going to kick back and listen.
Okay, cool.
All right, all right, James, Jeremy, take it away.
Okay, let me start with my introduction. So like Tammy said, I'm sitting in here for her today, and I'm interviewing James Walbert. James has been targeted for a few years. His 15 minutes started 2.5 years ago when he got a restraining order forbidding a person from electronically harassing him. This case was written up in Wired magazine in mid-2009. You can search for it on the internet. Look for the phrase, "Stop blasting that man's mind." James' case is unusual in another way, too. He's gotten evidence of foreign objects in his body, implants. And the thing is, it can be very expensive to prove what a microchip does, what its functionality is. I'm not aware James has proven the functionality of those implants, although I'm sure he'll clear that up in the interview. Just as an aside, I've got a new survey up, just posted less than 24 hours ago, where I asked TIs to put their targeting-related events, including the search for implants, on a timeline. It's at RUtargeted.com. Anyway, there's this evidence. And once you got that evidence, the burden of proof starts shifting around. This kind of evidence should lead people to ask, how did those implants get there? Who put them there? Why did they put them there? Who manufactured the implants? Who designed them? James has some answers. You're not going to get court victories without evidence. You're not going to get public outrage, which will trigger an investigation, without something the public can see and understand. So James's case is important. I have this website where my focus is on shifting toward the deceptive aspects of targeting. And there's a lot of trickery involved in this stuff. So whenever I see a targeting-related story, I want to attack it from several angles. I don't assume official accounts are accurate, but I also don't assume the target's got everything 100% right either. This kind of skepticism is necessary. When the mainstream media propaganda machine is behind you, you can get away with anything, literally. Like in the aftermath of 9/11, the eyes and ears in the media told the public a story which turned out to be very misleading. There was no questioning of the official story, and in the absence of questions, the country committed to very costly military action. And there were a lot of stakeholders, military contractors and their employees, for instance, who knew pretty much what was going on, but found it to their advantage to play along. With targeting, the machine is fighting against you every step of the way, and there are stakeholders, and they play along. I'm bringing up 9/11 deliberately because there's some parallels between that and targeting. Many of us have been through our own personal 9/11s, our own personal false flag operations. We were presented with a scapegoat or a patsy, which was very believable, and only found out much later that we'd been led on a wild goose chase, a very costly wild goose chase. And realistically, these kinds of misleading operations are probably orchestrated by the same people. So one has to be skeptical. But I'm not here to tear Walbert's story apart. I've already questioned him in person, and I'm satisfied with the broad outlines of what he's talking about. I met James at the Bioethics Conference in Washington, D.C. of March of this year. I'd only heard about him through the stories I read on the internet. When I met him in person, I was pleasantly surprised. James is young at heart, even if his body has taken a beating in the last few years, and he's done his homework. So, James, welcome.
Thank you. Well, good to have you. I mean, it's good to be here. How are you?
Good, good. All right. I hear that you've been to a couple of interviews since I saw you in March.
I've done at least three talk shows, well, actually three radio shows since March. Yeah, yeah. So
and there's an article about you in the 14 Times now. Is that new?
Yeah. Yeah, a four-page article that made the cover. It was a cover story, a feature story of 14 Times. It's in 20,000 circulating copies, and I'm just, you know, guesstimating that it's probably, you know, another 15,000 copies that are just on the stands for free sales. So, if not, I mean, there probably could be more. But it's a four-page article written by the authoring journalist, David Handling. He actually sent me a copy of the magazine from England to my house. So I have basically an archived, authentic copy straight from the authoring journalist, David Handling. So yeah, it's the second one that he has done. The first one was in Wired magazine, like you had mentioned, and it was pretty credible. You know, I mean, he drew a lot of conclusions to the possibilities of it actually being, you know, a plausible claim. But in this article, out of 14 Times, he really shoved everything down to the ground as far as, like, a BS in people, trying to give disinformation, trying to say that, you know, people are delusional or, you know, psychotic or there's a social downfall or non-implemented member because they're claiming that they have these devices in them. Like you had said earlier, to be claiming something is just literally nonsense, silliness, and hearsay without having the evidence. What I had shown in, as far as like paper evidence, as far as physical evidence goes in Washington, that was just a very small amount. I only had brought maybe 8 or 10 articles with me. I have 800 articles to date right now, as well as 12 professionals for the case. So.
Okay, let's spend the next 3 hours going over the titles of those articles. I'm just kidding. All right, I'll get into this more in a bit, but first I wanted to go over the background, your background, and how you came to be targeted. The first thing that comes to mind, that there are certain things that a lot of targets seem to have in common, a family background, a certain kind of family background. What about your parents? Were they in the military? Did they travel a lot?
No. Well, there were some of them that were in the military.
But not your parents.
No, definitely not. My mother, well, my father had enrolled in the Air Force,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know how far his career went. I think he had gotten like a medical dishonorable discharge or something to that effect. He wasn't real good at it either way. But
you grew up in Kansas, right?
No. I'm not from Kansas. I'm from Chicago, Illinois. No.
Oh.
I've only lived here for a little while in Kansas, so it's been about 20 years, I guess. So I just turned 40 in February, so yeah. I was about 18 when I moved here, just out of high school. So.
Okay. What kind of work were you doing before you were targeted?
I'm a licensed commercial and residential maintenance technician. I do heating, ventilation, air conditioning, HVAC. I do plumbing. I do electrical work at the commercial level as well as at residential level, which basically means I can go in pre-owned buildings or just owned buildings and working for their grounds management team, run all diagnostics on the inside units, your chiller units, your cooling units, your heating ventilation units, check like variable air valves and stuff like
mm-hmm.
that, VCTs and things like that. So that's what I'm licensed to do. I'm a licensed maintenance technician. I've been for about 10 years now.
Okay, what set these guys after you? Why did they go after a maintenance technician? What happened to set it all off?
Oh, well, I had made an invention in the year 2004. I started to market it. I had already moved to patent it. I patented it immediately. So I took two documents of disclosure out for the government. placed 7 patents on it, as well as a design patent. So in the midst of doing that, a mutual friend of myself and my ex-fiance, I was working with him. I had gotten him a job. Well, about a month straight, the guy kept hounding me. He developed a very keen sense of interest in the invention, as well as wanting to strengthen the friendship, you know, with allowing me to let them invest in the invention, him and his family. So beyond my better judgment, knowing that you should never allow friends or family to go into business ventures in any way, shape, or form. I mean, it's just not good business ethics. With that being out there, you know, I kept telling him no. I kept turning him away. So he finally had, you know, been very persistent at work one day. So I came home and I asked my fiance about it, you know, and she said, we talked about it for the rest of the evening. And sure enough, she said, well, let's go ahead and trust him, you know, let him invest if he wants to invest, you know. We've known him for years. We know everything about him. We like they're going to take our, you know, our inventions or our monies and run.
Well, what kind of money did he put up? How much, roughly?
It was $8,950.
Oh, okay. All right. Not exactly a huge amount of money.
No, it's not. No, it's not. It's a very small amount of money, actually, for, you know, most inventors or IP holders, intellectual property holders, if they are, you know, usually lucky, they can always find angel investors online. And angel investors, the reason why they call them angel investors is because they pretty much have a perfect investment background, which means that they have invested into things that they have never complained about. Not to say that to be an angel investor, you have to be a successful investor, because 97% of all small businesses fail, no matter what you're led to believe. The majority of them fall flat on their faces. Either way, so angel investors are always the best way to go, because they have good reputations. They actually are monitored. You know, their investment activities and monetary activities have been pretty much taken care of. So you're able to view all their history as an investor or business partner. So.
Okay. All right. So this gentleman, so you decided to let him in, and then how'd that lead to your problems?
Well, about 3 days into it, he started calling me, like, more persistent on the phone and stuff, you know, wanted to get more information and stuff. And I had given him every bit of information that I had from the invention promotion company out of Coral Gables, Florida.
Had they already signed up or signed a contract with you at that point?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, yes, most definitely. And see, what's really peculiar about the contract is that I didn't know that something was up to begin with, but with me being the kind of person I am, I'm a very honest person. I like to be straight up. Whether people like me or not, you know, I've never really much cared about that. I mean, most people don't like me because I'm about it. You know, I don't sit around and talk about it. So, I mean, I get shit done. So, and he had basically been telling me that he wanted his family to invest and stuff. So I went over there. I introduced the patent search portfolio to him, as well as a little bit of information about interested manufacturers and things like that. My ex-fiance and I had actually confirmed the invention promotion company out of Coral Gables, Florida, and pretty much signed off on a patent search and things like that to show, you know, that the actual invention is patentable, that the obtainability of it is valid, and there is an invention promotion marketing firm involved as well. So I took everything over there and I showed his family. I went over some stuff. They wanted to sign a contract right away. They wanted me to sign to actually do up the contract. And I told them no. I said, you know, I said the only two requirements that I ask of you for you to be involved with as investors is that, one, you draw up your own contract, you know, do a squabbling or scruples amongst yourselves. Two, you know, have it be a promissory contract. That way I have, you know, the obligation of promising you this monetary gain for your investment. You know, I legally obligated myself to these people, which was stupid. You know, it definitely was. But I was being generous and I was being grateful. You know, I gave them a certain percentage on contract over a certain amount of years. Actually, I do believe it was just indefinitely, for the profits off the invention, as well as, you know, basically 50-50 for Clean Can Technologies, which is a research and development company for the impregnation of biocides into several different types of plastics.
Let's get back to how this led to problems. So, okay, you signed off on a contract that you probably shouldn't have. This guy started pestering you, and then what?
Well, inside of 3 days of signing that contract with him, you know, I mean, he basically had his federal attorney uncle draw it up out of Washington State, and then sure enough, he had sent things down to here, made a copy of it, and brought it to me. Actually, I went to him, and I signed it. So with it being signed, I guess it gave him a false sense of, you know, some type of authority or, you know, or
entitlement.
Yeah, exactly, entitlement or security, you know, because then he felt cocky. You know, he felt like he could actually say something to me, and either one, I wouldn't understand what was going on, or two, his attitude about the whole thing, Jeremy, was that he basically felt pretty confident after I signed that contract to try to actually execute his crime in its entirety. You know, so he had walked up to me and told me, I figured it out at dinner one night, instead of just getting up and just, you know, punching the guy, I just pretty much walked away from it, went and took a walk, thought about things on the way home. He's a pretty little guy, you know, it wouldn't take a lot to whoop him. So I just walked away from it. I walked home, and about halfway home, they pulled up next to me. He's all like, well, what's the matter? I was like, I think I'm figuring out what's going on, man. You know, and I told him, I was like, you're not going to be able to rip me off, dude. And that's the bottom line. I took all these preemptive measures to protect the invention just in case if I ran into snakes like you. You know, and he's like, well, I'm going to tell you something. You're going to lose your girlfriend. You're going to lose everything you own. She thinks that you've been cheating on her and all this other stuff. And he says, and we're going to keep telling her these things, Jimmy, until you either give us a bigger part of the contract, you know, for the invention, even though the guy wrote his own contract to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted more, you know, I mean, which doesn't make any damn sense. You know, it's like complaining at the drive-thru window because you didn't order enough food and you're still hungry. Seems pretty stupid, but
okay.
That's his mentality. Well,
so this guy dove into a contract, and he was obviously planning to try to strip it away from you. That's the way it looked.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly,
okay.
Jeremy. And that's exactly the whole case scenario. So, and I wonder why he was so persistent in the manner that he was persistent in. Very descriptive of conversations. Very not necessarily arrogant or very flamboyant about the information that he was trying to disclose, but I definitely, you know, caught on after he started talking to me. You know, he said, Mike and I have done this before, and he's referring to his friend Mike Schumacher of Wichita, Kansas, that him and Mike had done this to people before, and that I would end up either giving him everything that I own, or they would just discredit me and get me locked up and take everything that I own. So, needless to say, I just kind of laughed and shrugged it off and put on the boxing gloves, and here we are today. You know,
right.
I mean,
okay. So that was in 2004 when you got crossed by those people?
Yep. It's February of 2004. And I had known them for years before that, man.
Right.
I mean, I would have never allowed them to invest. You know, I mean, why would I allow, you know, snakes to crawl in my yard? You know, I mean.
Okay. Well, there must have been more to it than that, obviously. I mean, just a couple of guys talking tough, that's not going to bring you down.
No. Well, you know, once they found out how much the invention was worth, you know, I mean, over a 20-year patent life, which is how long an average patent lasts, it's been an estimated net worth of $12 to $17 billion. So that motivated them.
Yeah, I understand that, but what happened after that? At some point between when you had a run-in with these people and now, some point between then and now, you got knocked out. You came to and you found out you'd been operated on. Let's hear about that.
Okay, well, in February 2004 is when I had awoke. I'd say probably mid-2004. I've got the information inside as far as an exact date. But in 2004, February, I woke up with, I went to sleep on a Friday night and woke up on Monday morning to my fiance waking me up, getting me ready for work, basically. I had woke up and my left side of my jaw was so swollen and so damaged from whatever they were doing to it with a placement of these devices that I had actually called in sick to work because I couldn't. I had woke up, my jaw was all tore up, the inside of my left ear and my fascia tube was completely destroyed. I mean,
and, your girlfriend had no idea what was going on.
How this happened. Later on down the road, I found out that she was involved. You know, she had
told
me that I deserved this to happen to me because I was lying to her and cheating on her, and this is basically her, their application of revenge. You know, is to basically steal this invention from me. So not only did she, when she left, she had moved out, you know, got on a plane and flew away, and then I put all of my stuff in storage and came back here. I was living in Ohio, and sure enough, you know, she had gone back and took all the stuff out of storage. Her mom was calling my friends, making threatening comments about how the invention was really hers, you know, and all this other stuff, you know, but we got all that stuff cleared up, and she's not walking around saying that anymore. I mean, I got that cleared up, so the suspicion has switched several times, you know, as far as, like, my own suspicion. I've had my investors investigated. I've had my family investigated. I've had people around me investigated. And sure enough, when I had spoke to the FBI in May 30th of 2007, they told me that they would open up an investigation. That I would. What first thing I needed to understand is that no stranger was doing this to me. He said the likelihood of a stranger doing it to me was very, very unlikely. That more than likely it is a close friend and or a family member.
Okay. So you got knocked out in early 2004 and operated on, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay. How did you learn that you were implanted?
I woke up that morning, that Monday morning, and my ear was bleeding real bad down inside, and my jaw was hurting real bad. So I called into my job. I went to a minor emergency outlet here on Central Street or Central Avenue in Wichita. And the doctor stuck down a probe down inside my ear. It's some type of scope that they actually use to look down inside your ears with. And upon that being done, he had decided, as well as noted on his medical report, that there was a small laceration and a reflective metallic object beyond that laceration.
Oh, so you discovered it almost immediately.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, within at least 72 hours of it being placed, I definitely, you know, had a doctor on record that had already identified the damages. He said, whoever did the left side, you know, must have been in a hurry, basically, because they just tore you up. You know, so the right side is almost all the way healed. That's why you were able to get just a little tiny bit of blood. The left side of my ear was just dripping with blood. So,
But you decide not to try to get that removed because it didn't seem like a big problem.
Well, the doctor himself told me that if I had any more problems with it, just to come back in and see him, because he's already documented the actual damages and cited the fact that there very well may be something in my ear. Well, in during the course of that week, all the pain had disappeared. Everything had subsided, so I didn't think that there was anything wrong. You know, I would have never suspected that somebody had, you know, knocked me out and put something in my body, you know. So,
yeah.
I mean, that first suspicion was totally gone. I never even suspected it at all. Even though the doctor had mentioned it, I still had no idea what implants were. So.
But what kind of evidence have you gathered that you're implanted with chips that can be used to hurt you, like X-rays?
I do have some on hard copy X-rays. They're just showing up as the RFID tracker is the first thing that we found that we were able to confirm. You know, as far as actually being an active biomedical device that has been implanted in my body. So even though the cochlea or cochlear implant had been documented, we weren't able to confirm that particular implant right off the bat. What we were able to confirm was that from an MRI and radiotelemetric and infrascopic readings that were done by William J. Taylor agencies in 2008, that there was no doubt that my body was emitting a signal, as well as, and he had stood right in the telemetric path of that signal and had actually been very successful in honing in on what signal, bit rate transfers and things like that. So, and with an infrared scope, he was actually able to see the technology coming to my body. He had documented it, and I have that on file on an actual hard copy of the readings itself. From there, I moved to to court. I went to court and basically filed a petition for a protection order against Jeremiah Redford, the fellow that had told me he basically had done this to people before, and they had basically gotten away with it before.
Okay. So how many implants have you got? And besides the cochlear implant, where are they? How big are they?
Well, she doesn't know the actual size as far as the ones being in my body. I mean, as far as the ones being in my ears. We do know that they most definitely make a neurological access, which is disturbing my nervous system as well as disrupting my nervous system, as well as nervous system amplification of the central nervous system. So and she did that through an in-house measuring technique that she has out there in California. It's basically a bed that creates a small electromagnetic field of continuity that basically goes through your body. She will go over top of you with a coupling device that couples with the table itself. And if there's any blockages in the area that she's testing, then of course the small field of continuity or electromagnetic energy is unable to actually couple with the oscillating device above it. So during her test of measuring my nervous system, she had come to the conclusion that in the places that she wasn't able to make a connection, that there more than likely was something there stopping it from making that connection.
Okay.
So according to actually just a conclusive report, she had cited due to the telemetric readings of the William J. Taylor Agency, confirmation of the RFID chip by Dr. John Hall and Dr. Terry Robertson and an independent radiologist out of the state of Texas as well, that she would go ahead and issue the blood test for it. And it's not something that you can just walk in and ask her to do. You have to basically get a prescription. You have to be prescribed to her as a specialist. So my family doctor here in town, not only did he review everything and agree with everything that was going on, he actually agreed enough that he went ahead and prescribed me, you know, and issued me special toxicological testing to be done per the offices of Dr. Hildegard Staniger. She's PhD. So
roughly, how many people know, besides TIs, how many people know and understand that you have implants, that you have these implants?
Oh, well, I've done radio shows. I've been doing radio shows with professionals. I did do some.
Let me put it this way. I'm not talking about the audiences that you've spoken to on radio. I'm talking about in your neighborhood, in your town, in your workplace.
Oh well, as far as like just basically family members and a few friends. I don't really try to make any close interpersonal relationships with people while this tactic is going on. You know, because I know they're. I mean, I stood the first 3 years of case research and case study, I stood in recognition of everybody else's failure. And I don't mean to say that as a bad thing, you know, but if you're going to go into a fight, you're going to have to go into a fight knowing how to win. You know, I'm not going to show up to a football game in a tutu with a tennis racket. You know, I'm going to show up dressed and I'm going to suit up and
right.
tie it up. You know what I mean?
So I
stood in recognition of the majority of people's failures, and I literally just chose a complete opposite path. You know, I didn't just come right out and say, well, I'm being harassed, but, you know, we have suspicion of being implanted. I basically had seen a investigator in the state of Ohio. He had tried to convince me then that there was something in my body that was emitting a signal from my body. Of course, we had paid him and we thanked him for his services, but I was very reluctant to the fact that somebody had put something in my body, you know, and I didn't want to go back to him, you know what I mean, because it kind of fruited me out a little bit. You know, the guy was talking about implants and gang stalking and stuff like that, because I was ignorant to the fact of it, Jeremy.
Yeah,
I'd never heard of this crime before,
you know,
and not to say that, you know, upon hearing about it, I thought that this, you know, private investigator was crazy, because I didn't, you know, I wasn't ready to accept it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and as far as something in my body to track me with, I was completely oblivious to what the hell he was talking about. I had never heard of anything like that. I'm a normal human being, you know. I don't sit around and consider bizarro, you know,
scenarios, right?
Exactly, odd behavior of other people around me. I mean, who the hell would have ever thought that, you know, somebody would knock somebody out and then jack them up with implants. I would have never guessed it, Jeremy, at all. I mean,
of course.
That's not something. I mean, who the hell would think that? I mean, logically,
right? Of course.
You know, I mean,
yeah,
so
that is not a normal situation by any stretch of the imagination.
Exactly. So,
okay. Obviously, these implants have been causing you distress. What kinds of stuff have they been doing to you in terms of electronic harassment?
Well, as far as like biophysiological effects. It's basically the same as what most people are experiencing. I experience central nervous system amplification, which means that, and it's very meticulous, specific biophysiological monitoring. They're actually able to tell when I want to lay down and go to sleep because inside of at least 10 minutes of laying down, I can actually taste the energy pour through my jaw. I can feel it light up my left side of my body, and I know right away that I'm not going to be left alone to go to sleep.
Have you ever gotten the thing where they make it feel like your body's vibrating or like your bed's vibrating?
No, not really. I've never had the vibrations before. I've heard fellow TIs describe that. It's not something that is relevant as far as my case is concerned. That's something that is like an acoustic ultrasonic vibration of some kind. It's still a phenomenon to me. I've been able to find the equipment that actually does it. Heterodyning, super heterodyning equipment that is basically acoustically able to do this to somebody. But you would have to be able to stay in line of sight of this device.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, if I can just interject my own opinions about this, I think the reports that are coming in about that are mostly from electronic harassment and nervous system control, getting the muscles to vibrate rapidly. But in any case, that hasn't happened to you. But you have, I believe you've said that you've gotten voice to skull? Or voices?
Not like what you would think. I don't hear voices like in my head. I actually have an individual that stands out at the source and yells at me. I mean, my friends have heard him. My family members have heard him. Fellow TIs, Jonathan Henderson, came down here to do some testing with infrared. The camera, it's like a $40,000 infrared camera. It's a thermographic camera, and he had heard them yelling at me down in Cary Salt, which is like it's a salt strip mine. And I asked Jonathan then if that's what he receives, and he said no. He said, voice of skull is different than what you're getting. So, and a few other people have said that to me, too. So,
yeah, well,
I don't think
well,
that's...
If other people are hearing it, then it's probably not in your head.
Exactly. I mean, and I've never had it in my head. I can always hear it like, out in the parking lot, you know. And you can tell it's audible because it echoes. You know, I mean, other people around me. I mean, my coworkers have walked around the houses that we were working on, and right in the middle of broad daylight, and the guy comes around with a paintbrush in his hand and looks up at me on the ladder, and he says, Jimmy, and I was like, yeah, and he's like, is that what you're talking about? And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, well, I can hear somebody, you know, off in the distance screaming about being the FBI and that they're going to come and take your inventions and stuff like that, and I was like, are you serious? He's like, yeah, you know, threatening to kick your ass right now, and I could definitely hear it, you know what I mean, and the guy was telling me, you know, I'm going to come kick your ass, Jimmy. And it's been 8 years he's been saying this to me. So, well, it's moving up on 8 years. Yeah, I know. So I'm not taking a little girl and his Girl Scouts very seriously at all. You know, I'm not real worried about him. You know,
right.
he's still on the porch barking like a little dog. So, you know, and I always get threatened to go get sued. I always get threatened that they're going to take my inventions. And at first I was a little compelled by his statement that they were going to sue me and take me to court and make me look like a liar, stuff like that. Basically, and I didn't know what it was. It's called gaslighting. I had no idea what it was, you know. I mean, so I kind of ignored it. But after 5 years went by, Jeremy, and nobody had ever filed charges against me, nobody ever filed a lawsuit against me, there was even no word on the street about people being mad or calling me a liar. So this has all just been a bunch of crap. You know,
yeah.
I mean, and the guy can't validate any of it at all. I was like, so now my whole case, well, I said my whole approach to the situation is now moving up on 8 years of this guy basically saying the same thing to me, committing the same crime against me. It's more than obvious that his accusations have literally fallen short. I mean, he has proven that to all of us just by nobody doing anything to me in reality for at least 8 years.
So people in your vicinity are aware that some guy is harassing you?
Yes, most definitely. I have actually been very successful in taking signatures for a petition for the harassment and illegal surveillance to stop in Wyndham Court. It's the apartment complex I live in here in Wichita, Kansas, basically for that to stop, you know, and we mail that off to the ACLU. Well, needless to say, it got a little bit of attention, and there was a little bit of concern shown, but I didn't really have solid evidence as far as these people attacking and actually surveilling neighbors around me or, you know, fellow neighborhood residents as well. I was basically just able to prove and evidence the fact that I did have a restraining order against the basic fundamentals of tracking technology, microwave, acoustics, any type of heterodyning, biometric coupling and things like that, but and detectives' readings and Jim Guest's involvement, but I would have had to have needed all that support for every signature that was on that petition.
Let me just finish up the electronic harassment questions. Can you pin any health problems on your electronic harassment?
Yes, there have been biophysiological implications that have been noted, and they have been traced as the obvious source of the implants as well as the biometric coupling device. This thing is actually able to alter my heartbeat. It is able to disrupt my breathing. This implant is designed for the basic seizing of the human nervous system. So once they're able to track you, they can introduce you into different fields of propagation. But yes, there have been neurological damages, physical damages to my body. There's been an inner ear vestibular trauma to both of my ears. That's been documented by like several doctors. Damages to my nervous system, as well as pathological physical injuries to my body. These conclusions were made through 31 blood tests, in-house testing, as well as observation and research.
Okay.
The type of implants and the coupling signal that is able to transfer the biofeedback. So.
Okay. Well, I guess that leads me naturally to the next line of questioning. All this testing and all this investigation can't be free. So how much has all this cost you, would you say?
Well, I have a lot of it on contingent right now, but if I was to walk out and just pay everybody and walk away, I'm looking at about $90,000. So, and that's covering all of my medical tests, CAT, MRIs, X-rays, 31 blood tests, toxicological report, makeup, two private investigators, and then the actual damages that it has caused me to myself financially is about $90,000. If I had to pay everybody and walk away with a one court case today, I'm looking at spending about $90,000. So.
Yeah, so your financial situation right now is probably not very good.
No, definitely not. They've ran me out of jobs. They've ran me into the ground. Having a case this solid and having this much evidence, you know, that's basically irrefutable, having magazine articles and doing radio shows with, you know, major radio show talk hosts out of, like, Beverly Hills, California or Flagstaff, Arizona, I mean, one show that I did was like 3 to 5 million people were listening right when John Hall and I were speaking. So, I mean, it was just massive, huge, you know.
Okay,
so with that going on, needless to say, you know, when you have a case like that, you end up getting pounded 1,000 times harder than if you did not fight back, you know. So 8 years, I mean, and it doesn't sound like much, but when several doctors, MDs, as well as general surgeons are starting to now recognize pathological as well as neurological physical injuries to my body, you know, then it's definitely taken its toll over a period of time. So,
do you still have a job now?
No, I lost my job due to stalking. The state of Kansas recognized it as wrongful termination due to stalking and harassment on the workplace, and they went ahead and with the wrongful termination being cited, they went ahead and gave me my unemployment. My unemployment ran out a solid year ago right now. So I've actually been income free, which sucks, for about a year now. So
yeah, I understand. That's interesting. You also have documented evidence of stalking as well from a reliable source. What kind of stalking related stuff has been going on? You talked about gaslighting.
Yeah, there's a lot of gaslighting going on. You know, people that are basically trying to get me to doubt my own memory and perception, trying to screw up. And these are just basically family members. They're basically, Jeremy, I swear to God, it's almost like a script out of a movie or a book, because these people are acting exactly like my investigator told me that they would act like in 2008. You know, he said, watch the people around you, because they're more than likely going to be, you know, victimized as well, turning the drone clones around you and used as basic, you know, minions against you to try to run you into the ground.
Who's this investigator who told you this again?
William Johnstone Taylor, J. Taylor Investigations. He's got...
And when he said people being turned into drone clones, what do you mean by that exactly?
Well, actually, he was talking about basically them cloning the same type of, like, crime that he's been solving for, 51 years now. So he basically was describing to me what these people were going to do due to the references and cases that he has solved in the past that were consistent with mine. So, and he's right. You know, I mean, a lot of the people around me, my family and friends, they were very receptive at first, as well as a few of them were, you know, I think he's just gone crazy all of a sudden or whatever, you know. And some of them were behind me, but inevitably over the last 8 years, I have lost a few friends, but it has been by choice. You know, I mean, they have mouthed off, and I have either told them to get out of my life, or I basically just chased them out of town.
So you're getting a lot of people who are saying stuff indicating that they're kind of against you.
Well, yeah, a few people, at least like five people, you know, I mean, but they're, a few of them are family members, and the majority of them are just close friends that I had around, you know, that were, I mean, at the time they were basically mooching off me, they were living in my house, you know, not paying any bills or putting forth any like true financial efforts of, you know, support or anything like that for themselves, you know, so.
Okay.
Like I said, I made those decisions myself. So
now, let's get to the court case. The court case that put you on the map. You won the court case. You won a restraining order, correct?
Yes. In 2008, I was able to substantiate in a court of law that I definitely had been exposed to this type of tracking technology as well as eavesdropping technology. And of course, right away, Jeremy, I knew that I had an implant in my body. I knew that there had to have been. I had at least three doctors here in Wichita, you know, explained to me that the only way for this crime to occur at with the kind of effectiveness level that I'm describing to them, which none of them doubted, you know, because they saw all the paperwork and actually spoke to several professionals that were involved, that there would definitely have to be a tracking device in my body. You know, he said, I don't care who's telling you, you know, that they can target you without a tracking device in you. He said, but James, I'm here to tell you right now, unless you live in line of sight of this device, you know, and exist in line of sight of this device all the time, he said the likelihood of you having a tracking device in your body is a strong 100%, you know. So that's when I had confirmed and basically came to grips with the fact that somebody actually did knock me out and somebody did implant me. So.
Okay. And the electronic harassment, you would pretty much categorize as remote stimulation of these implants. Is that
exactly.
right?
Exactly. Yeah, yes. Remote.
Okay. A lot of TIs, you know, they're under the impression that they're getting attacked with remote weapons. And, of course, it is remote, so someone has to be doing this remotely. But they're under the impression that they're under attack by microwaves when they might actually be suffering from nervous system stimulation.
Exactly. Or
that's your take on it?
Yes, exactly. Well, I mean, and the reason why is because I'm very active now with elected official David Larson out of Southern California. Everybody knows about the Larson Report. Everyone knows about David Larson's case. We've done several radio shows together now. We're pushing for Coast to Coast as well as Alex Jones. Both of them shows have shown interest. So I've got emails from them showing interest. So. With that being out there, Dave Larson and I have paired up basically, and we have been storming the scene. We've done three radio shows in the last 5 weeks I've done 4 radio shows, and I've done 3 radio shows with him. So I'm basically doing a radio show, broadcasting the crime at least probably 3 to 5 times a month now. So,
excellent.
Yeah. You know, I've gotten a lot of attention.
You're really getting your name and your case out there. That's good.
Exactly. I have to.
When you go on these shows, how do you describe yourself? Do you describe yourself as a targeted individual or victim of crime or what?
Well, I basically describe the crime, you know, and it's like I was telling the Intel Hub the other night when I was on with that guy, Bob somebody. I can't remember what his last name is. I do so many interviews, I forget. But he said, well, how do you know what's going on? Well, I mean, he said, because I'm so fluent with the explanation of it, you know, and I just laughed, and I said, well, it's all truth, you know, so I can just go off the cuff and cover somebody with, you know, enough verbal evidence and enough, you know, truthful accusation, actually truthful comments that I don't have to, like, recite it, I don't have to practice it, because I'm all I'm doing is saying the truth. So I introduce myself as James Walbert, you know, I mean, I don't look at myself as being a victim, I never have, because that's where... And that comes from, like, a very long period of my life being introduced into martial arts training. I don't care if I'm losing the fight. I'm never the victim, no matter what, you know, because I am able to fight back. You know, I'm James Walbert, and I will do whatever I can to make sure that I win over you, you know. So, and that's what these people are aware of. So when I get on the radio, I'm very bold about it, you know, and I'm very – truthful about it. So the introduction of it is just, you know, I introduce myself as myself, an inventor as well as a maintenance technician that has been victimized by a copycat crime. I feel it's a copycat crime because I have no true evidence. I can't go to like a court
of
law right now and prove how long this person has been in my life until this implant is extracted. Now, upon the extraction of this implant in my body, if it shows that, you know, let's say just the neural prosthetics have been there since I was a child due to lot numbers, manufacturing numbers, the manufacturers itself of the implant, due to the pathological investigation as well as investigation of solid physical evidence, then and only then can I say, you know, that I'm a victim of 25 years, you know. I mean, but what I can substantiate in court is that I have definitely – been a confirmed victim since at least 2004.
That's what you need, evidence.
Things I can prove.
Yeah. Now, going back to the court case and the removal of implants, I heard through the grapevine, and I just want you to confirm or correct or debunk this rumor if you possibly can. I heard that you've got a settlement coming this way. Coming your way, a substantial settlement. Any comments?
Well, as far as like a substantial settlement, I haven't heard. Now, I do know that from the actual court case itself, we did against the city of Wichita. I had till December 21st to submit a leave for amendment, okay, which is basically where you amend your case, you add attorneys, or you add all your last final pawns or rooks.
What case is this again?
The case number is 10-1234-EFM-GLR. It is James Walbert versus the City of Wichita, Kansas, Wichita Police Department, and 17 John Does that are unknown, which are 17 police officers that had basically taken erroneous reports and had filed defaming report that basically made defaming comments.
A suit against the police department, that would be where this rumor of a substantial settlement is coming.
Exactly. So
I realize you can't necessarily comment on ongoing litigation, but I just want to identify the source of that rumor and confirm or deny it.
Well, I had heard it too. I had heard that I had spoke with my friend Carl Petrovato out of Florida, the actual, he was a third-party witness to William J. Taylor's testings, so he's an expert witness on my, for my case. And I had called him, and he was laughing, and we were talking about the case. He says, oh, new rumor on the Internet, Jimmy. And I was like, what's that? He's like, well, you've already won $3 million.
That was what I had heard, right.
Yeah, yeah, and that you're a millionaire winner, you know. And I was like, no, I haven't won anything. But they have, you know, put the case into ADR, which is alternative dispute resolution, which is something that is used for out-of-court settlements as well as the passing of hush money, you know, to happen. So she had given me the opportunity to make a good faith proposal to them as far as a settlement goes. They basically asked me, do I want $1 million? Do I want an investigation? Basically, tell me what you're wanting to, you know, settle, what it's going to take to settle this case, James. She said, and I'll see what I can do. So, you know, I thought that that was pretty compelling right off the bat. You know, I had, and all I did was respond to the motion to dismiss. That's all I did. And I went ahead and wrote up a response to that, sent it in with about 20 pieces of paper and like 7 or 8 articles of evidence that had been cited. So, and upon that happening within probably 3 to 5 business days, realistically, she had contacted the attorney, well, actually the judge out of Kansas City, Judge Gerald Rushfeld, had basically initialized the order for ADR upon seeing that evidence. So somebody pushed the button for them to go into settlement mode right away. So
good.
And I've got all that on paper, every bit of it all. I just mailed everything to Kathy Meadows. I do believe, and she's another expert witness. She's a clinical psychologist for my case. She's basically putting together a small summation of the documents that I had sent her, and more than likely is going to end up writing up like a draft letter or something to assist other TIs to basically take the same steps once they're able to confirm things, you know. And that's real important, you know, is to have an implemented system, you know. And it's not because it's James Walbert's case. It's just simply because I've, you know, been successful in putting things together and establishing an irrefutable line of solid evidence. So
okay, good. All right, we're coming to the end of the hour. Let me close off with the final question. What are 3 pieces of advice you would offer to other TIs?
Okay, well, what I would always offer to TIs is education. Know what you're talking about. Don't walk into some place with a bunch of, you know, exaggerated or flabbergasted, you know, explanations. Education is very important. Evidence would be the second piece of advice that I would offer to people. Once you're able to actually explain your situation, once you've educated yourself as far as what type of implications this is going to have in your life, where the consistent situational scenarios are, as well as characteristics of evidence of the particular crime that you're, you know, feeling that you're a victim of and you have educated yourself on, I would introduce it to professionals then. So research really well and make sure that you find an individual that isn't about monetary gain. If they're willing enough to accept your case on a contingency, then you know you've done your homework well. And the third one that I would offer is basically hindsight. You know, stand and look at every single way that other cases have failed, and don't ever take that path. You know, don't go sue the president, you know, because I can guarantee you, you know, there's a lot of disinformation and crap going around, but if you look back 40 years ago when this first started with this program, everybody has taken the same steps. They're all Manchurian candidates. They're all CIA, you know, test subjects, or they have now developed a psychosis of some kind that they actually believe that they're working for the CIA as a remote viewing device. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, some of the things that I've heard people say are just, there's no wonder that they got locked up. You know, I mean, I mean, I'm not being mean or anything at all, but being a victim of the crime, I don't talk to them, you know, because
just because you're a victim doesn't mean you throw away your sense of self-preservation when talking to
very good
court.
Very good. You know, I mean, you became a victim of a crime, you didn't die and just become retarded, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, if you walk off a building when you hit the ground, it's still gonna hurt, you know. So,
yeah,
I mean, no matter what, if you walk into the police station telling them that you're hearing voices and someone's stalking you and you think it's the president, they're going to put you away. You know, don't. But that would be my strongest point of advice: is know your game, man. You know your game. Know what you're fighting against. You know, quit walking outside with a blindfold on, just blindsiding everything around you and blaming everybody around you and everything around you for what somebody else is doing to you. You know, decipher the make it look likes and the wannabes and the as ifs. You know, which is all assumption. Decipher the assumption from the reality of what is around you as being real. You know, I mean, what's the likelihood of good old mom, you know, tackling you in your sleep and actually implanting you? You know, probably not very likely. You know, I mean, not to say that it doesn't happen. You know, but just
right.
Sensibility. You know, is what I would offer. You know, as advice to people, as being, you know, an activist for 7 years and an outspoken target for at least 6 of those 7 years. You know, and I've been very successful. So. And it's not because I'm James Walbert or anything. I've been successful because I stood there and watched everybody walk down the same path and go right off the cliff like a pack of lemmings. You know, I mean, they all followed each other right off the cliff. You know, and I was like, well, that's kind of stupid. You know, I'm not gonna follow this guy's lawsuit, like Sinclair's lawsuit. You know, I mean, what was he doing? You
know, of course.
He went in and tried to sue one of the most lucrative, powerful spy agencies in the world with no evidence. You know, he had no evidence of anything. He was relying on his captors, his perpetrators, telling him.
And you know, the funny thing is that these people go off half cocked, and then what they do gets cited by as evidence by others.
Exactly. Yeah. And they're trying to take somebody else's case scenario. You know, and that's another reason why I've been, you know, successful, because I don't go by, you know, what Eleanor White by chance is saying. You know, and I'm not saying it to put her down. I adore her. But in a court of law, who the hell is Eleanor White? You know, Eleanor White is a lady that made up Raven.one website. Well, okay, you know, the judge is going to be like, well, okay, you know. So we'll take her as an expert witness when she has no expertise at all. You know,
right.
I mean, so in a court of law, that's just an opinionated hearsay. And you can't have that, you know.
Right.
You have to be able to present things that are factual, you know. Stop going off everybody else's opinions of things. You know, step back and become your own team player, you know. I mean, and it sucks that it has to be that way.
Yeah.
But I can promise you that we're all suffering from the same thing, Jeremy. You know that as well as I do. And with David Larson, you know, stepping out saying, hey, you know, I was involved with the CIA, I was involved with their research and development products of this biomedical technology. You know, I was a non-consensual test subject. You know, not only have I been a non-consensual test subject, but I've been involved personally with the research and development process of these biomedical devices. And he's on the radio with 3 to 5 million people telling them, you know, this is how it is straight up. There is no other way to do this to people. He said, at some point, they would lose you, you know. I mean, so, and I'm not saying that everybody's implanted. I never would, you know. I mean, that's going out on a limb, you know, but I have.
It's difficult to imagine how else it would be happening, right?
Exactly. You know, if you can prove to me that you're not implanted, then I'll believe you.
Yeah.
But
okay.
Until that happens, you're implanted. So.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Excellent. Excellent first hour. Tammy, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. And can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello? Okay, good. All right, because I want to be a little greedy here. We were having a really good conversation before we started recording and talking about what you've learned and experienced since the previous Bioethics Commission where we met. So I'd love to hear more about that before we open the lines for questions from other people.
Okay, well, what I've learned since March, since we've met, you know, I mean, which was great. I love meeting you all. I think you all are really cool people. I was probably a little overbearing because I was so damn nervous. I've never been to Washington, D.C., let alone speak in front of presidential appointed committees. I was a little nervous, so.
No, you were great, and I loved meeting your friend Jason, too. He was really cool.
Yeah, Jason's pretty cool, isn't he? Yeah, but what I've been up to after that, you know, as far as What I've learned since then is I don't know what I've learned. That's a very odd question for me to answer because it basically hasn't. I mean, nothing's changed.
Has it gotten any worse? What about you were talking about how you were posting to the Bioethics Commission? You were still in contact with them, and that you learned new things.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know what I had posted. Oh, well. As far as like learning what's going on, as far as like the new meeting that's coming up in May, I do know that they're asking for basically experimentees or test subjects to step forward and to come forward and basically speak on the record against what they're being tested for, the unethical applications or violations that they have been experiencing, but they're only asking for test subjects that are known that they're test subjects. So that's just very odd to me. I think that she's wanting to leave.
Do you say they're asking only for consensual test subjects?
Exactly, yes. Well, that's what it says on the website anyways, in May. Mm. Is if you are a suspected experimentee or an illegal experiment has been conducted upon you, then right now is the time to step forward and say, like...
That wording sounds like they're talking about non-consensual test subjects.
That's what I'm saying. Just like what she did.
Yeah.
I mean, just like what Goodman did at the meeting herself when she was speaking to Martha about the ethical approach of remote neural monitoring. Not only did Martha and her government-funded entity of scientific research had confirmed that they have the ability to observe somebody's neurological and biophysiological signals without them knowing or being consensual to it, that they were actually, you know, conducting these tests. And that's when she had,
right.
It was 11:30 of the first day, and she had become completely appalled by it. And, I mean, you were there as well as I was and saw her face
right.
And the sarcasm that she had reported, that she had responded to her with. You know, so she's telling me that, her response exactly was, so you're telling me that with these non-consensual, unwitting tests of yours, that there are ethical measures that are being taken, you know, and she pretty much just left it as that. And Martha had explained that there was no possible way that there could have been, you know, ethics involved as far as being a non-consensual, unwitting test subject of somebody remotely neurologically monitoring you for any reason. So
right,
that was confirmation.
Right. And another doctor who was there brought up how, you know, it was not ethical to be able to conduct experiments on people without their consent. I mean,
exactly.
They brought it up themselves throughout the entire first day.
Uh-huh.
Even
and
starting out
good.
With the first slide was about mind control, you know?
Exactly.
I just want to make a little program note that if anybody has a question for James now, just hit *8 on your phone. Or if you're in the chat and you want to call in, it's 724-444-7444. The call ID is 95450. There was another question from the chat that I thought was a good one. Will the same doctors and investigators that worked with you work with other targets who can afford to pay them?
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Or not. Will they work for free? That's another question.
As far as like a contingency, it's much like what Melinda Kidder had said on the interview with James Martinez and I during his Cash Flow Radio show, was that the reason that they were able to take the case so seriously is because of the amount of evidence I had accrued prior to that. So that's what's important. That's where I was going with Jeremy's questions as far as the closing question on the interview of advice that I would give is that right there is basically just do your homework before you ever
right.
go to any of these people. This way, not only do you have a clear, concise explanation about what's going on with you, it also helps to educate the professional involved to make them, he or she, aware of your particular individual situation. So... But, yeah, I've definitely had hooked quite a few people up with these two private investigators since this story has been released on the Examiner online. So, yeah, they're both willing to work with targeted individuals. As far as, like, a contingency goes, like I was saying, that would, you know, depend within the realms of availability of contingency. The way contingency works is if you're able to basically show that you have a case or solid evidence or a one shot, you know, at your 15 minutes of, you know, your claim to fame, basically, then the likelihood of them going contingent is very good, you know, because they don't have to do a whole lot of work. No money has to come out of their pockets, you know, so they're more than likely going to lean that way right off the bat anyway.
If I could just throw in my two cents, quite a few TIs, including myself, have gotten scanned and not found any implants. But just because we don't find implants doesn't mean they aren't there. The resolution of an MRI or an X-ray machine or even a CT scan is pretty limited, like about 1 millimeter at its smallest. So if what you've got is smaller than that, and I see no reason why it couldn't be smaller than that, then you're not going to pick it up on that kind of scanning device. So I'm just warning people in advance. Don't assume just because you scan yourself and don't pick up anything that nothing's there.
Exactly. I mean, it's a real good point that you bring it up, Jeremy, because, you know, throughout the 40 years of this crime, I mean, we've all known, you know, being victims of the crime, they've become a little more crafty, you know, than what they were before. So they're actually now designing implants that look like bones, inner ear cochlea bones or cochlear bones, you know, vestibular areas that are able to be recreated. They're actually able to hide these things. Dr. John Hall, on the interview with Kevin Smith's show, had made some very good points as well. You know, don't always, you know, go in saying that you're looking for a chip, you know, because that's going to get you hit right away. I mean, and
foreign object. Foreign object.
Yeah, a foreign object or a foreign body. You know, now that we've been successful in finding 21 states in the United States right now that have specifically outlawed and banned illegal forced chipping, and that's exactly how it's worded in the House bill. They have illegalized forced RFID chipping, human tracking of human movement, as well as made a compensatory grandfather clause. So, you know, with them, and every single bill has a compensatory grandfather clause in it. So what it's showing me, as well as several professionals, is that in the wake of what's going on the Internet, and several other cases that are parallel to mine, like Bob Boyce or Dave Larson, that actually have the physical evidence in hand, and several other cases, just from this movement alone, we've now seen 21 states develop and pass through House bills that specifically outline illegal forced chipping of any type of implant, tracking device, or biometric biofeedback device of any kind. So it's showing me that more than likely these state legislators have known for decades what's going on, and now they are putting laws into place. They're implementing a stair-step tactic, basically, or a 12-step program, you know, as far as like making claims against the state for illegal implantation. So is it, you know, the fact that they've known how many people are implanted, and our little movement has literally, you know, rocked the cradle enough for them to become concerned? Or, you know, are they aware that everybody knows now and they have no way out of it? You know, and if neither one of those are relevant factors on the table, then why are they interacting compensatory grandfathering, you know, into their House bills and laws? I mean, and the way that's worded is that you have to have the actual implant extracted, have a pathological report written up on it, as well as a scientific conclusion or investigatory conclusion, basically stating that, you know, no matter what your suspicions are, if you, upon getting this implant removed, and they run lot numbers, manufacturer's numbers, and start doing cross-referencing with pathological testing to find out exactly, you know, where this came from, who made it, when it was made, and the manufacturer of it, say like it was, you know, made in 1983 by Verichip, or like a biomedical equipment by the Alfred Mann Foundation, you know, they would be able to do this testing and find out the age of that implant, basically, you know, and then you can sue from the moment that implant was made, the way it's worded in the bills is a basic estimation of time of placement, from that time of placement, say you were implanted in 1983, if you were implanted in 1983 and they confirmed it with pathological tests of the device in you after it were extracted, you are able to be compensated from 1983 until 2011 at $10,000 a day per offense per crime. So you're looking at anywhere from a minimum of $10,000 per day upwards exceeding over $100,000 per day, depending on how many implants are there, how many times they actually activated them, and these things have to be documented. You know, I mean, so, and every single law reads the same. Every one of them has a compensatory grandfather act implemented into the House bills that are being introduced right now. So with that happening, that shows me that they definitely know what's going on. They've known for decades what's going on. And I think that, you know, with the majority of us doing what we're doing right now is rattling the cage enough to scare some of these legislators into just passing laws and financial, you know, paths of implementation so that you can't just walk out and say, you know, I want $1 million per day, you know, for every day I was harassed. This way they give you a point of compensation that is legally, actually financially legal on the books as well as the laws. That's what's relevant as far as it is to me.
That was a great explanation. If you want to add to it, go ahead.
Oh, no, it's okay. I just want to touch base on the validity of it, you know. I mean, now it is a validable crime. It's creditable because now 21 states are passing laws against the same crime that people are getting locked up for, and I think it's a bunch of crap. You know, I mean, if there's something in your body, then you're going to be the first one that knows it, and you should not ever be condemned or judged or put away just simply by making a simple criminal report or a self, you know, preserved point of conclusiveness, you know, and that's basically where I was going with it.
Okay. We have a question coming in from Derek.
Hello.
One of the listeners. Hi, Derek. Welcome to the call.
Hi, James. I wanted to ask you. I was listening about halfway through, and you were saying about you never experienced the voice to skull, but you say you experienced voices and other people have heard. I wasn't sure exactly what you're speaking about, so just elaborate a bit if you could.
Sure, no problem. Well, basically what I'm experiencing as far as a communicative involvement is being able to hear what is being said from a source. It's not necessarily coming, like, to my skull or to my mind by any means. This is actually being broadcasted, like, at a source. Like, say if there were a person with what they call an LDAP. An LDAP is a long-distance acoustic projector, and what it's designed to do is to flood an area, or what they call a sound scope, into an area with a broadcast of a warning, a message, you know, of access area denials and things like that. That's basically what I'm hearing, is somebody that is at the source yelling over a long-distance acoustic projector, or it's a long-distance communicator of some kind, and it's an actual audible voice. It's not something that is consistent with, you know, what most other victims describe as being voice to skull. And that's what, you know, professionals have told me. It's like you're definitely not suffering from microwave auditory effect, you know, because if you were, then it would be something that is relevant as far as, like, being in the shower. You would hear them in the shower with you, you know. And I was like, well, I've never experienced that. If I'm in the shower and I do hear something, it's usually coming from the other room. I can hear it, I can hear it from where the source or the actual monitor is at. I don't hear voices. I actually hear a human being, which has been confirmed by other human beings. So,
may I ask you a question, sir? I'm sorry. So you say that you hear almost, you feel it's a physical auditory vibration rather than electronic telepathy?
Basically, yeah. I mean, you can hear it echo. Like if I'm sitting in the front room, I can hear it echo down my hallway. So it's audible noise, which means that it is mechanical. It's not voice to skull. Or microwave auditory effect. That's the thing that they explain in the DOD documents and in complete, you know, thoroughness, is that the microwave auditory effect, or what you'll never find a term that has ever been coined in a professional realm called voice to skull. So that term is like kicking a flat ball. You're not going to get anywhere with it. If you are experiencing something of the sorts, then the actual intellectual terminology is microwave auditory effect. Now, then you'll find tons of scientists and actual FBI agents that know what that technology is. So,
well, it sounds very familiar. I mean, I think the experience that most people feel from the electronic telepathy, whatever, they feel like they hear voices in their head. It sounds very similar to what you're experiencing, and I've never had anyone else concur, say, like, let's say they're in the same room with me, say, oh, did you hear the same thing? But you do say that you feel like you're experiencing gang stalking, or people are, you know, I've listened to much of your talk. You were saying you've had run-ins with the police, 17 different police officers, you said?
Well, yeah, you know, and it wasn't because they were harassing me. It's the 17 reports that I had made since 2004, and inconsistency with them recognizing the solid evidence that I was basically giving them. And the reason I cited them in the lawsuit is because they actually came out to the house, explained to me what the weapon does, what the weapon is designed to do, how it affects the human nervous system, and then they refused to investigate. So,
really?
Yeah, so I took a stance against them. Well, because they were very knowledgeable, you know what I mean? You wouldn't go to McDonald's to order a pizza, you know. You wouldn't go to Taco Bell to get a cheeseburger,
but,
you know. I mean,
your local police, they knew about the technology. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, basically, yeah. They knew about the technology. They know about the crime itself. They had tons of information and educational statements to make to me when they were here about the crime. But upon filing the actual report, they had filed erroneous reports, which basically means that they were wrong. They had filed out-of-line reports and made very discriminatory, defamating statements about me in their reports. So to my face, they were Mr. Nice Guy, but on a piece of paper, they were trying to make me look crazy. So, I brought charges against them.
I can understand the police and government workers, you know, not all of them, not grouping people, but they're very jaded towards that sort of thing, especially if you live in the city. I'd say my own experiences, I mean, I know that I felt like I've experienced, which I feel is illusionary now in hindsight, but feeling that, you know, people, like literally the voices were goading me into making lawsuits, you know, and that sort of thing. And actually, I noticed a similar theme that with people that, you know, they're, basically, I had an experience where a police officer came to my residence and she pat me down. Basically, I felt that was totally wrong, and it was wrong. You know, we live in America, but and I clearly, you know, she was just being abusive. But I went on, and that was during the time that I was experiencing this. So it's interesting that it's a similar pattern, and you know, I wouldn't know full on. You say other people have heard these things. But I would never, I mean, it seems like, you know, you said you spent so much money. That seems like the MO, you know? That's
exactly, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the MO is definitely, you know, for the gain of intellectual properties by making me look like I'm nuts, you know?
Yeah.
And the investigator that I'm working with, you know, has been handling cases like this for 50 years. So he was able to solve a very powerful, very well-to-do individual out of Texas, you know. I mean, we all know who she is, but I can't go into, like, detail because of case sensitivity. But she had basically been targeted for the exact same thing. She's owner of the Lay Foundation, PepsiCo, as well as Lay Potato Chips. She's a multi-billionaire, and she had been introduced into the exact same crime. They were trying to – they had implanted her. They had hit her with weapons, trying to make her look like she was mentally unstable so they could actually literally, per contract, force her out of, you know, her share of any monetary gains from the company itself. Which, you know, I mean, she's been her family's been Lay potato chip factory, Lay potato chips or Doritos,
GMO
or PepsiCo, you know, Frito-Lay for, you know, several, I guess it's like the 50s, you know. So these people have been very well-to-do and very well-off for a very long time. Brothers and sisters and relatives were the ones found to be a relevant factor for targeting her to basically squash her out of the scene so that they could have her share of any type of monetary gains. So with that going on, and then mine not being quite the crime that most PIs are suffering from, but it seems like a parallel to the crime that most PIs are suffering from.
Yeah.
With those conclusions and the ineffectiveness of it, because if you parallel my situation to most TI situation, the TI is usually a true TI, you know, not to say that I'm not a true TI, because I am, but the crime that's going on is literally just a parallel and a copycat crime state. Do you see what I'm saying? They've been observing these crimes and criminal activities being, you know, introduced and reiterated into government programs. So these people have taken these tactics, or have picked up these ingredients for this, you know, stage scenario to try to make it look like Inventor went crazy, so they're going to try to steal Inventor's properties.
It sounds completely like, you know, that it's the modus operandi. It's that the gang stalking seems to be that. And I would ask you, actually make a point, you said about Lay's and PepsiCo. It's interesting, not many people know, but, you know, soda and potato chips, those are the main two sources. Anything that's fried with soybean oil or using corn syrup is, that's all genetically modified nowadays. And you would wonder, you know, you hear about GMO. I know I'm going way off, but just for a minute, that it's, you know, you never know where it comes from, who eats this stuff. You know, we grow it in massive amounts. Soybeans, you know, do we live in Japan? We don't eat soybeans here. So that's just a quick thing. But I would ask you, so you're totally certain, you're 100% certain it's not V2K, and that you're not, like, being goaded into imagining this?
Yeah, definitely so.
I mean, I'm in a stairwell, by the way. I'm sorry. If you could.
Yeah, I mean, definitely so. And the reason why is because of all the professional descriptions of what's going on, you know, and the way that I'm able to explain it, the actual communication device that's being involved is not consistent with anything that any other TI has ever explained as being microwave auditory effect or any investigator or professional that I've actually introduced it to. So neither one of them, none of my professionals feel that it is a point of relevance. You know, it's not something that we're focusing on. It's not something that we are, you know, even collecting information against. You know, by telling the actual signals that are involved would explain that it's not probably quite the same as other TI's cases. And another reason why is because the TI is usually discredited right off the bat. That hasn't happened to me yet. I've been a doctor. None of them have given me any labels. I've never been labeled or diagnosed with any mental instabilities or mental conclusions of any kind at all. Another thing that gives it away as a copycat crime is that ever since I've been fighting back against them, I've made great strides. I've made great leaps and bounds against this technology as well as this crime itself, where in 50 years there hasn't been pretty much a handful of people that have been successful against this crime. You know, that's the difference between what's real and what isn't real. I don't believe that, and if I am a real TI, well, I mean, and I know I'm a real TI, but if I am like an MKUltra victim or something, you know, then wow, you know, what the hell has my perp been up to? Because most TIs that I hear stories of, they have all been discredited immediately, and their reports fall on deaf ears.
Well,
you know, the evidence falls on blind eyes, you know, because they have that upper hand in the background. You know, I mean, I haven't experienced any of that stuff, so.
Well, exactly. Well, I mean, it's interesting that you say the symptoms of the V2K is literally, it matches the schizophrenic mode. So it's interesting. You know, that's why most people at first are immediately attacked or.
Exactly. You know, I mean, and where, you know, most people hear it in their heads or be able to show a consistency of thought reading or mind reading. You know, and frankly, I have not experienced any of that. You know, at least I don't think I have anyways. I mean, both my investigators are like, well, you know, because I was hearing that the technology is actually able to see one person's memories, you know, and draw them to a conclusive scenario of what they had done when they were like 15 years old or, you know, something like that. And it was done through biophysiological signals. and monitoring and thought reading. And my private investigator, William Taylor, just laughed, and he's like, I'm going to tell you something, Jimmy. He's like, I've been solving this exact same crime against you and other TIs for 50 years. If they have the ability to read your mind and see your memories, then they are the most exclusive individual on the face of the earth.
He said
most of the time what a TI experiences is somebody speaking to them, telling them what is going on. They're not actually interpreting anything. So, you know, being able to actually see people's memories, you know, I can't find a professional that believes that, so I don't believe it.
If I could interject here, James, there's no reason for you to believe that, and you shouldn't believe it just because you read it on somebody's website. Any kind of surveillance method is that you only learn that you're under surveillance if you're tipped off. And
exactly.
So the people who are saying this have very specific reasons for believing that they're under mental surveillance, but that's because they've been tipped off. And you know, they learned because they were allowed to know, and that's just the way it is.
Exactly.
But,
you're absolutely
that doesn't mean that you're under that form of surveillance. There's no way to know unless you're tipped off.
Exactly. And the professionals that have, you know, done these things, or that have made these statements, and I'm not repeating my own self, you know, concocted opinion. I don't ever do that. You know, I only touch base on the things that I can actually evidence or prove, or what professionals that are involved with my case have confirmed, you know, is that there is confirmation that I most definitely am a targeted individual, without a doubt. There is 100% confirmation of illegal placed biomedical devices as well as illegal tracking RFID chips in my body. And we have been able to, you know, draw a confirming conclusion to the fact that this crime has been implemented against myself for the gain of a financial motivation. And that's been done by all three private investigators that are involved. Well, the one in Ohio is still kind of involved, but he's mainly just a side guy. He was an initiator. But Melinda Kidder, as well as William J. Taylor, they both, you know, are conclusive to the fact that whoever is committing the crime against myself has done it for the gain of whatever intellectual properties I own. I own 12 inventions. I have 7 patents, and we're now actively trying to market one of the inventions again. But, of course, I received the same threats I did the first time. You know, it'll make a nice conversation piece on the shelf. We're never going to let you have that invention. So, you know, I mean, and these are, you know, things that are being said, you know, at an audible level. You know, so, I mean, this is an individual, you know, threatening me, stalking me, threatening me, trying to intimidate me every day. You know, and like I had touched base on earlier, is that it's now moving up on 8 years of this guy spazzing out behind his little bitch stick, you know, so, I mean, and then nothing's happened, you know, so I'm not real worried about it anymore.
I'm sorry. I just want to say one more thing or two more things.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I just want to say first that, I mean, or ask James, rather. I mean, he knows, obviously, and you know, James, that, you know, what you're saying is mimics these symptoms of schizophrenia, clearly, you know, and it just seems all rigged, and you know, I don't think there's going to be any meaningful change, or, you know, and stuff, you know, the judiciary system and the police system is already so biased towards it, even medical system, et cetera, all the psychologists. And I'm not saying not to keep going, I'm just saying that, I mean, it sounds crazy to me, you know, it's crazy enough that they're doing V2K, or perhaps they may actually be stalking you. And I also want to say, just quickly, and then you can mute me or whatever, that Lee Harvey Oswald and other unscrupulous individuals who, you know, obviously they were crazy, most likely victimized by V2K, they claim that he was implanted, actually, Lee Harvey Oswald in particular, said he had an implant in his rectum or something, in his hind end. So, I mean, it's possible that he did. But I've heard other people, you know, usually people who don't seem, you know, like they're doing well, saying that, yelling about being implanted. And it seems like maybe that's the tactic of the paranoia from the CIA. So take care, guys, and thank you for letting me talk. And good night.
Thanks for coming, Derek. James, you have anything to say about that?
Well, you know, I mean, I just, the only thing I can actually do is just, you know, stand back in disappointment and think, you know, I've never been diagnosed with anything. I have it on MRI, I have it on x-rays, 31 blood tests. I've been evaluated by 5 doctors, several MDs, 2 private investigators, full political support. I mean, and I have never heard anybody make a comment like that before about my case. So,
yeah, if I could just add something. Many of us have experienced, and I said this at the beginning of the show, a false flag, basically a personalized false flag, where it appeared like some person had an incentive to go after us, but it turned out to be something very different. And that something very different happened to include the technology that some of us are talking about. But in James Walbert's case, it does appear that everything is exactly as it seems, that there's this guy and had a financial motive and had the connections to get this guy implanted. And you can say whatever you want about what's really going on, but James has the evidence, and that's what matters, the evidence.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where I'm coming from with it too, Jeremy, is that if it were a lineage of mental ailments of schizophrenia or any type of polar, monopolar, whether it be a unipolar, bipolar, or a mental deficiency of some kind that I were suffering from, I would definitely be able to show, intellectual debilitation. I wouldn't have my wits about me for sure. And I surely wouldn't have, like 12 to 15 professionals, willing to testify on my behalf if they had, come to any conclusive evidence that I were crazy. You saw the evidence in Washington. I mean, those letters were sent from state representatives and very powerful, famous private investigators and very powerful, famous doctors and authors and toxicological scientists.
Yep.
These people ain't my neighbors. I mean, this isn't some guy's opinion, an area of hearsay or conversiveness.
Yeah, of course.
These are credible, professional, political, medical, investigatory, as well as, psychological professionals, so I'm not making my own conclusive, opinion.
You,
I'm just repeating what.
Yeah, of course. You go to court with the case that you have, and you have a case, and you have the evidence, and that's what matters.
Exactly, and I've already won one case already, proving the technology is being used and that it exists, and it says right on my final order that the defendant was duly served and the plaintiff, has proven the allegations of the abuse by the preponderance of evidence, and that box is checked, so it isn't, a default winning either. I didn't win just because the guy didn't show up, I won because of the amount of evidence, eyewitnesses, credible sources of information, as well as political support. That's the reason that I won, is because of all of the evidence I was able to submit. And I've accrued at least 8 more professionals and about 750 more documents of solid evidence, So it's irrefutable. I can't argue with these people and tell them that, that they have no right to be making these conclusions about me, because for the first year, when they were trying to make me understand that I were implanted, I was denying it completely. I wasn't calling them crazy by any means, but I was telling them that, if you really think that somebody put something in my body and is tracking me like I'm somebody's pet, you're going to have to prove that to me. And that's exactly what they did. So, what do I say? Touche. I challenged them to prove that I was being implanted and harassed, and they did exactly that. So I can't really, throw too much of my opinion into it. Because my opinion does not outweigh factual evidence that I have right now. So
we have a question coming in from Jean. Hi, Jean. Welcome
to the call.
Hi,
Jamie. Hi. James, I was wondering, did they actually remove a chip from your body?
No, not yet. They haven't been able to. Well, what the deal is I have an MRI and a couple hard films of an x-ray. I sent my MRI down. Actually, I've sent my MRI to several doctors. And what the procedure for removing a foreign body is that what has to be done is they have to have an admissible film showing the foreign body, And then they have to do what they call a needle localization. And basically what that is they're telling me that they can't use the MRI as a surgical guide to get down to that implant because it's so deep into my trapezium muscle. And that's a muscle that runs across your back. It's what they actually call an atlas muscle. It's right near your neck, in between your shoulder and your neck. And inside that muscle, about inch and a half, maybe 2 inches deep, which is just unbelievably deep, it's way down in there. And there's a scar right at the top of my skin, and there's a big bore scar all the way down to the actual implant itself. But they can't use the MRI as a surgical location film. And I was told this 2 weeks ago. So what I have to have done is full body imaging, which is going to be another $3,500 probably, is what I'm guessing. So I have to have another full body image scan done. That way when I go in to visit this doctor down in Georgia, that he will, you know, be able to remove all of them at once. So he's wanting that to be done. And then have a needle localization done with the one on my shoulder, and then I fly down there and get it cut out. So that's what I'm in the process of now. I went and visited my doctor here in town, and I've got to pay my bill down a little bit, you know, before I can get the referral to go out. So I've been able to collect donations as far as getting myself to Georgia and a place to stay to collect the actual implant. But as far as, like, little tiny trivial things, I haven't gotten all of it cleaned up yet. So I'm in the process of it, though. I've got all my emails of communication from doctors citing the actual object on MRI as soon as, like, 10 days ago, you know, from a doctor citing it again. And all I have to do is just go down here to my doctor here in town, probably early this coming week, Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday, somewhere around in there, I'm probably figuring about Tuesday, and then go in and then have him refer me out to what the doctors are needing to be done, which is called interventive radiological testing. So I have to get that done and then get body imaging, mail all of the hard films down to Georgia, and then go in for the last final needle localization and then have it cut out. So I'm figuring within like the next probably 2 to 3 weeks.
Do they think there's one or more?
There's five that we've been able to identify five of them right now. Two neural prosthetics, one in each ear. And the reason that they're being identified at the level of a neurological device is because they're able to actually make a neurological access by amplifying my nervous system or observing like intentions, whether I'm going to take a left or take a right, you know, things like that, you know, or disruption of my nervous system or neurological functionality too. So we have to call them, you know, neuroprosthetics because they are able to make a neurological access.
Wait,
so,
I'm sorry. Do they make you turn or they?
No, not at all. Not at all. Not at all. It's a what's it called? It's a preemptive decision making like tactic. They're using it at airports right now. I can't remember. It's some type of scanner, though. But mine's an implant, so it's different than what people are experiencing in a line of sight. You know, I mean, it's basically your basic intentions is what they're trying to develop now, whether I'm going to do things, you know, whether it would be. And then, see, and the reason I can say that is because that has been confirmed, you know, that this type of medical neural prosthetic has been used in the past for neurological information exchange, or what they call a data acquisition. So that's basically what I'm touching base on.
Okay,
you know,
go
ahead.
This is just theoretical, but do you think that the government could have had some involvement in the technology and your gangs knocking in order to get a cut of the money?
Well, you know, I would, you know, like to feel that special. You know, I mean, I would like to put myself on that soapbox to think that, you know, the GOV come in and chipped me to try to steal my inventions, but it logically doesn't make any sense because this is what TIs or victims have been being told for 50 years, that mm-hmm. it's the president, that it's the CIA or FBI. I don't believe that. I never mm-hmm. have believed it. I never will believe it unless they actually snag an FBI agent up you know, right in front of me and bring mm-hmm. him or her to my face, and they verbally admit to me that they were doing it to me and that they were FBI the whole time. I think that's all just a dumbed-down tactic to try to scare people into compliance. You know, if you want to scare the hell out of somebody, you know, or make them, you know, paranoid about being watched, tell them that you're God. You know, nobody wants to know that the FBI is watching you, for God's sakes. You know, mm-hmm. and I'm telling you right now, it's the FBI is not going to go around and just, you know, break in your house. And they might have, you know, I mean, I don't know. But as far as my particular, you know, situation, what I can prove in court right now, I cannot prove in court that the FBI chipped me and are harassing me.
Okay.
I don't, and if I do experience gang stalking, man, I don't know it. You know, I mean, I'm mm-hmm. so clear-minded and so not paranoid. I still go out to clubs. I hang out with my friends. We go watch mm-hmm. live music shows, concerts, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah, I don't know how you're sane.
What's that?
I said I don't know how you're still sane.
Oh, well, I don't know either. But I have doctors, you know, telling me that there's nothing wrong with me psychologically. So
that's
what I have to believe, you know.
You said something about state legislatures being aware of this technology and that they were developing some kind of 12-step program for TI.
What I was saying was, what I was touching base on was the fact that the way that the House bills read, it's like they have purposely implemented a procedural application of compensation for victims of forcibly being implanted with an RFID tracking chip, you know, and that's happened in 21 states now. If you were just to Google the term, you know, laws against forced RFID, and that's all you have to do is just laws forced RFID, and you're going to come, I promise you, you're going to come to at least 13 sites with 13 states that have specific wording in the bill that literally illegalizes the act of forcing somebody to take an RFID tracking chip or an implant biomedical device of any kind. So
okay,
that's
so
basically what I was saying.
Has anyone else claimed that they've had this type of implant in them?
Oh, definitely so. I'm working with another inventor that's all the way across the country that's experiencing the exact same crime that I'm experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
He was drugged and he was chipped and he was tracked by his former business partner. So, you know, I mean, these tactics that are being used against us are to discredit us, you know, by saying, well, you're hearing voices, you know, and I don't hear voices. I hear there's some punk off in the distance, you know, talking crap to me. But as far as being able to prove, no one's going to ever be able to prove that I hear any voice in my head. I can't prove it, you know, and I know that nobody else can prove it.
Okay,
you know?
If you think that you're chipped, what would you recommend as the first step?
Well, what I would recommend as first step, if you have suspicions, I would find out what state that you live in, of course, and then research the laws that are regarding your case scenario as far as what you feel is going on as being relevant. If there is a chip or a tracking device that you feel that is involved or relevant, then I would literally just find out what the laws are about that, because now in 21 states, they are passing laws against forced chipping. So keep that in mind, you know, that somebody had to have been doing it for it to become an illegal act. You know, they're not just going to say, oh, well, let's outlaw fast breathing, you know, I mean, because it's not something that, you know, people do very often if they're running. You know, I mean, somewhere along the line, somebody had to have proven that these chips are being forcibly implanted into human beings. So, and they had to prove it at a legislative level before they're ever going to implement some law. I mean, because 5 years ago, if you reported that you had a chip in you, you'd get locked up. You know, now you have a house bill that you can actually go to the police with or private detectives and say, you know, per this house bill, my constituency, you know, as a resident in the state of, let's just say, in the state of Missouri, you know, per House Bill 550, I am, you know, obligated and entitled these radio telemetric tests and medical bio tests, you know, with my own concerns per this law, without you, you know, basically trying to label me or deny my claim. So,
Have you gotten a lot of mainstream press? I found, a Wired magazine article.
Yeah. I got Wired magazine as well as 14 Times, print publication magazine. 14 Times was released to 20,000 copies circulating. That's on newsstands right now. I've gotten plenty of calls. I mean, I can walk over to my bookshelf and pull out a physical copy and put it in my hand. I mean, and it's mailed from England, so by the authoring journalist. So I've gotten that, and I've got tons of newspaper articles, lots of radio shows, and political recognition, as well as I've got the very first court case of its kind actually involving a prior court case of success. You know, a lot of people will try to, you know, chalk it up and say that your court case was won by default. That's not what the final order reads. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that the judge that signed that, you know, knows what he or she is doing. That's what they do for a living. So I think that, you know, a lot of the ridicule that I, you know, go through amongst TI in the community or just people around me is out of pure ignorance. You know, they don't have any clue, you know, about laws, you know, or about the actual winning of that case. So I've got one case. I've got the second one has been filed in court right now, you know, and it's not looking, you know, like I'm going to lose. So
okay,
I must be doing something right.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for being on the show.
No problem. Thanks for putting up with me. I'm very sick. All I can do is cough.
Well, I hope you're feeling better. Thanks a lot.
You've done really well. Thanks for calling in, Jean. You always have great questions.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, if anybody else has any questions, please call in star 8 on your phone. Were the implants that were found in you RFID? Somebody asked in the chat.
What's that?
Somebody seen online that the implants found in you were RFID chips.
You're absolutely correct, yes.
Okay.
The tracking chip itself is what's gotten all the, it's basically identifying the chip itself on MRI and like five doctors. I've got all the email diagnostics from all these doctors, and they're all, you know, all of them agree that there is something there. And Dr. Timothy Whitaker, the one that had removed Bob Boyce's chip, he is, you know, the only professional that actually recognizes the chip, and he's the only one that says, well, I can't really say what it is until I remove it, but I know what it is by looking at it on MRI, James. So, you know, he hasn't, you know, but he's pretty new to the situation.
Right. Are they willing to work with other TIs, like the people, professionals?
You bet. Yes, he is. And see, that's what I'm saying, you know, about the commonalities and typicalities of what most TIs go through. I haven't really experienced that. I mean, now granted, I still am a little, you know, pissed off at the fact that I'm being harassed, or that the situation is still going on with the amount of, you know, support and evidence that I'm able to present. But as far as, like, you know, these people throwing sticks in the spokes and trying to, you know, discrediting, taking steps of stopping me, they haven't been real successful at it. You know, where other TIs, state TIs, their whole lives trying to fight this stuff. You know,
right.
and that's where I come to the, you know, the conclusion that, one, you know, if my case is not a copycat crime, then I got the biggest group of idiots harassing me, because they have, I mean, I have just done nothing but just mop the floor with them. I mean, since day one, I've just been winning court cases and have got tons of doctors and tons of psychologists on my side. I've got politicians on my side, tons of investigators on my side. That's not usually the case scenario with a TI story, you know, is what I'm saying. So, and it's usually something that they've been in, like MK Ultra, or been targeted for life, for God's sakes, or been sexually trafficked, or, you know, and I'm experiencing the same thing that everyone else is, you know. I mean, and I am confirmed as a targeted individual, but I don't think for sure that it is the same thing that the typical TI goes through. I think that I have a group of jackasses that are basically, you know, trying to, you know, reiterate this crime. I don't know how they ever learned about it, you know, or or what they're
possibly, they're rogues or whatever. They're
exactly.
connected. I mean, there's all kinds of scenarios we could beat
our heads
against the wall all day trying to figure them out. There was one other question in the chat, which is, and after this one, I'm going to wrap it up. But which radio frequency detector do you recommend to get, in order to self-scan your body for emission, or do you have any recommendations for that?
Okay, well, yeah, most definitely. Like the first 3 years that I was in my research stages, I researched lots of telemetric equipment, for detection. I was basically just a truth, monster. I went after everything that I could use to evidence this stuff. There, and then I'll cover the range from like $50 to $20,000. A JM Pro 150, I do believe it's a JM Pro 150, is what was used to find my signals coming out of me. Now, he used these in a telemetric conjunction, which is how a true TSCM, a technical surveillance countermeasure specialist, would do. He didn't just sweep the area with 1 meter. He had several meters and swept the area in like a telemetric pattern, to cover the area. He was using both meters, one in each hand at the same time, and was explaining to me how this was being read, why it was being done. A JM Pro 150, I do believe is what it's called, is going to be what was used to actually hone in for lack of a better word, to basically triangulate in on the frequency itself. Now, there are all kinds of stuff out there that is, $100 to $200-$300. Just about any EMS meter is really good. Something that is able to show continuity or signal strength, as well as a frequency display of what kind of frequency, and something that is able to do an analysis. That way it can analyze every frequency that has been detected by the device, and then analyze that log reading, and then log what frequency was most consistent. Anything like that, is going to be really well. And there's also a device on the market called an Oscar. An Oscar device is a briefcase size radio telemetric triangulation device, and you only need it and it alone. And what it will do is it will triangulate the frequency in question. It will give you a geographical logistics printout from the machine itself, and then basically what it does from there on out is it will make itself appear to be friendly electronics, like a victim. It'll make itself appear to be a victim, and then it will start sending data packets it will start communicating with the device instead of the device communicating with the victim. So it will literally trick the device into thinking that it's still, communicating with just the victim, that there's no other type of observational device involved. And what it will do is throughout its course of communication, the data packets that are being sent, it will give you a geographical location, which is just basically longitude and latitude logistics on where this device is at geographically. So not only does it triangulate, and it will actually capture the frequency, tell you what the frequency is, and then start communicating with the device, and then basically trick it. It'll set it up, it's kind of like a narco sting unit, in a briefcase.
Wow.
How
much does a device like that cost?
For a device like that is $19,500 and some dollars and some change. But to actually take the course, and they sell to the public,
Makes me wish I were a millionaire,
Yeah, not only that, but I'm telling you, unless you are a radio frequency telemetrist, you're not going to be able to understand what that thing's saying to you. That thing is for that thing supersedes, stuff like Roger Tulsa's equipment. And Roger Tulsa's brags about his equipment, $100,000 for a microwave spectrum analyzer. It's made by Hewlett-Packard. And, it's a killer piece of equipment. Trust me, man. This thing is just not only will
but
it actually...
But you've got to be Roger Tulsa's or the equivalent, or maybe
exactly.
even better, to understand the device itself.
Exactly. So I would
or
recommend...
Or willing to... I'd imagine it comes with a textbook or two.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it actually comes with a course at a school in Texas. The Oscar device comes with a 6-week training course at a school in Texas for private detectives. So cool. You can buy the actual device and have it around as a nice, you know, conversation piece. But unless you are a licensed private investigator or have law enforcement training or are actually licensed a ham operator, you will never be able to use this device at all. So, I mean, they can't even accept you.
So we definitely need an expert. We need an expert like that on our team, for sure.
Exactly, exactly. You know, I mean, and I've done sweeps for – I was on the well, when FFCHS was with Attorney John Wilson, I had sat in on a conference call with them and Jim Guest. This is how I met everybody, because I had never stepped forward before. I called Derek, and I spoke with him and told him what was going on. I sent him some of my information, and he was like, oh, my God. You know, he's like, people need to see this, James. You know, people need to know that there is a way out of this, you know. And I was like, well, let's see what we can do first. You guys have an attorney. I've got the evidence. I've got several private investigators. You know, let's rock and roll with this. So, you know, I had got on the roundtable conference call, basically, and from there on out, they appointed me to be, like, involved with every committee or chair every committee. So I was like, well, I can't do all that. So I took, which was crazy because I don't know, but.
Well, no, because you've had the best evidence so far. You almost became, like, the poster boy.
Exactly, you know, and it is cool. I mean, it's not cool being me, you know. I don't like it because I get my ass kicked by these electronics every day because of it, you know, and I'm like, God.
Right.
You know, which is kind of comical after 8 years, Tammy, because it's still the same little girl and all her Girl Scouts over there just hiding and talking tough. You know, like, my God. After 8 years, you're still threatening to beat me up. Now, how many more years are you going to threaten to beat me up, you know?
I know, you know, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I know.
I thank you so much for your time today. Do you have any closing statements you'd like to make before we wrap up?
Yeah, well, just one. You know, it's a touch base back on the meters, you know. For the layman, I would recommend, you know, meters within the $50 to $300 range. You know, I would recommend at least 6 to 8 months of reading and studying, you know, finding out what these devices actually do. Don't just buy one for $50 and then call the cops and show them you have frequencies in your house. You know, I mean, these are things you're going to have to do, you know, probably all on your own. So don't spend a lot of money on a device. Better focus your money or your funds or your efforts towards accruing information that is evidence, that is solid, because anybody can misread that device. Because you can bring a cop out to your house and show them you have freaks in your home, doesn't mean that that cop's going to have the intellect to understand that. You know, most cops have an IQ of like 80, you know, and that's not being mean or exaggerative or condemning them or putting them down. That's just the honest God's truth. And academically, you know, intellectually, an IQ of 80 is about that. They're between a fifth to seventh grader. You know, so these people, this cop ain't going to know what you're talking about any more than what you know what you're talking about. So, I mean, that would be all I would have to say about it.
All right. Well, this was awesome. I thank you so much for your time.
No problem.
Yeah, this was really wonderful.
I hope it
helps. We got a really good
article. I hope it helps. I really do. That's why I do the radio shows, too. I hope it helps.
And don't stop. Yeah, don't stop doing what you're doing because you're such a huge inspiration to everybody else, just being outspoken. So, you know, do that and keep doing what you're doing. You're fighting a really good fight, better than most of us can say, because, you know, you really took the ball and ran with it right when you got it. So thank you so much. And Jeremy, thank you for conducting the interview. That was awesome.
It was.
No problem. I look forward to doing it again sometime soon.
That'd be cool.
All right.
Take care,
so
guys.
We're going to wrap things up. Thank you, James. Thanks for being with us today.
No problem. Bye-bye.
Awesome. Bye-bye. Good night, and stay safe. Next week, we will be joined by a prayer warrior, broadcaster, educator, and activist, Miriam Snyder. Same time, same shoe. So don't forget to tune in for that. And until then, I want to thank James and Jeremy again for a wonderful interview. Everybody, stay safe, and we'll see you next time.